Hello and welcome to episode 692 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I am one of the co-founders here at ETR, as always joined by fellow co-founder Evan Silva. We are coming off of two, what I thought were very compelling, very interesting conference championship games. Evan, how's it going?
Yeah, 2-1 score games. It's going pretty well there, Adam. I felt like the first game was very frustrating throughout. You know, maybe if you were a Chiefs fan, like a diehard red and white and yellow Chiefs fan, and you loved it maybe, but I felt like it was frustrating offensively on both sides. The Ravens defense played great. The second one was awesome, I think, especially if you wanted the 49ers to win and get to the Super Bowl.
On today's show, we're going to discuss everything we saw in those two games, what it means going forward for all four teams, includes a little postmortem on the Ravens and Lions. Next week, well, first of all, I'll be back later this week with Matt Davitt out to talk about the Super Bowl from a side and total perspective. Next week, Evan and I will be back to do a full-blown props extravaganza. So be sure you are subscribed on YouTube or on your audio feed to be sure you know when those episodes are indeed up. Before we get into it today, two more quick reminders. First, I know the lack of NFL, and this is going to be a long 2 weeks, but the lack of NFL leaves a gaping hole in many of our lives. If you're interested in taking on another sport, our NBA team is just insane in terms of the quality of work they're doing. Really, no one else on earth is doing what they're doing in terms of projections, props, everything. So if you're interested in hoops, head to that tab on establishtherun.com. Golf season is in full swing. If you're interested in that, head to that tab on the site as well. Second, still a lot of action on Underdog Fantasy, snake drafts for NBA, season-long best ball for PGA. We have rankings for both of those formats up on the site. If you have not tried Underdog yet, use promo code ETR at underdogfantasy.com. That's promo code ETR at underdogfantasy.com. All right, let's get into it here with these four teams, Evan. I want to start with the San Francisco 49ers. So again, we talked about it last week, a win, but a scary win for the 49ers. I would classify this as the same thing. They fall behind to the Lions at home, 14-0 early. 49ers were down 24-7 and a half. It was looking bleak. And then they get a big fourth down spot. And we'll get to all the fourth down stuff in a little when we get to the Lions. Then Ayuk makes just this insane 1% play off the defensive back's face mask. They get a touchdown. Jahmyr Gibbs fumbles, a botched exchange. And the next thing you know, it's a somewhat comfortable comeback to go to the Super Bowl for the San Francisco 49ers. So I have a bunch more thoughts, Evan, but I'll stop there. What did you think of the 49ers just falling on their face in the first half against the Lions before eventually pulling it out?
Well, everything that could go right went right, I think, for Detroit in the first half. And you saw that represented by the score where they go to the half up by 17.
Yeah.
I mean, they ripped a 42-yard rushing touchdown via wide receiver Wamo Jamo. They did whatever they wanted, really, on the ground. David Montgomery had a really big first half. Jahmyr Gibbs was highly effective in the first half. And so they were able to build this really big lead and control the ball. But, you know, at halftime, like, the Lions' luck, I think, ran out a little bit. And the ball started to bounce the 49ers' way, you know, obviously, most obviously via that Brandon Ayuk catch down to what I think it was like the 5-yard line.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the better team ultimately won, did not get the cover because of another Jameson Williams touchdown, a receiving touchdown there at the end of the game. But I'm glad to see San Francisco in the final because I think that they were either the first or second best team in the NFL. And at the end of the day, like, I'm not a fan of teams. I want to see the best teams at the finish line, and the 49ers got there.
Are you concerned that Jordan Love and Jared Goff have both gone into San Francisco and had a lot of success against this 49ers defense? I mean, they do not strike me as an intimidating unit right now, which is odd because they have so many good players. But yeah, do you worry at all in San Francisco's defense heading into this Super Bowl?
They have some, the 49ers have some problems at cornerback. Ambry Thomas gets exposed every now and again, definitely got exposed against Detroit. The pass rush has been a huge disappointment, specifically Chase Young. There's a bunch of you know, clips of Chase Young looking like he's dogging it on the field as both a run and pass defender. And there have been rumors that they might bench him for the Super Bowl. I also think that Nick Bosa has been disappointing to an extent, although I think he had two sacks in this game. Yeah, he had two sacks. But it just seems like he runs past the quarterback on so many of his pass rushes. And then again, they have issues in run defense.
Yeah.
Greg Cosell was talking about before this game on his spot with Ross Tucker, how the 49ers are maybe a vastly overrated defensive unit.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen that for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, in our yards per play stuff, which we're working on, and like, I really think our yards per play stuff is getting really good. San Francisco was middle of the pack for the season in yards per play allowed. Baltimore, Kansas City were up there among the elites. Two more notes for me that stood out for San Francisco. First, a healthy Deebo Samuel makes such a big difference. He only played 56% of the routes, but team high 29% target share, 889.0 receiving. And you know, you throw the ball 2 yards, little out to Deebo, and he ends up picking up 7 or 8 every time. And that made a huge difference. Second, Brock Purdy's legs, Evan. I mean, 548.0 rushing, but also eluding in the pocket. And like that throw where he threw it to Juszczyk on the sideline, the way he escaped the pass rush there was insane. And so you don't really think about this with Brock Purdy that much, but he's given them a lot with his legs lately. It's difficult to project going forward in the Super Bowl. I know that the public is all over the Brock Purdy rushing overs already in props. I saw that they're all over like over 11.5 rush yards for Brock. We'll talk more about that next week, but yeah, I don't know. Deebo and Purdy's legs to me were a huge, huge difference. Any thoughts on that or anything else on 49ers here?
Yeah, Purdy had at least 3 back-breaking scrambles in this game. You know, certainly not design stuff. He was not really a scrambling threat almost at all during the regular season, but he has been during the playoffs. He wasn't a bad runner at all at Iowa State either. I mean, he averaged 3.2 yards per rushing attempt for his career at Iowa State. That's a pretty good number for a college quarterback, where they count the sacks against the rushing yards. And he had 19 rushing touchdowns in 4 years at Iowa State. So he absolutely can be a quality scrambling threat. And we've seen that in January.
One more note on the Deebo thing. He was back to return kickoffs twice. So like clearly not any issue with Deebo's shoulder whatsoever. Give him 3 carries and they put it back on kickoff twice. Other injury note I had late in the game, Christian McCaffrey comes down like on his head at the end of a long run. Looked like a neck or shoulder issue. I'm sure he could have come back in the game if he was needed, but they give Eli Mitchell the touchdown on the very next play, and Eli Mitchell killed the clock at the end. And so one of my biggest bets of the weekend was Christian McCaffrey to lead the slate, to lead both games in rush yards. He ended up losing that to Christian McCaffrey, but I think it was 4. And if Eli Mitchell didn't come in at the end, that would have won. So that sucked.
One player that I thought might have a bigger game in the receiving box score here on San Francisco's side was George Kittle. Kyle Juszczyk actually wound up making 2 big-time catches. The way that he like can toe tap and the way he moves, I feel like he could have been a starting tight end in the NFL, like a Chris Cooley type. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, has been like he's been a fullback. But George Kittle, I thought, would have a bigger game. He had an unbelievable game as a blocker. He had some plays where he pancaked Aiden Hutchinson. I mean, he was a devastating blocker in this game. I think that we'll see him more as a receiver in the Super Bowl against Kansas City, which is really good defensively against perimeter wide receivers. Mm-hmm. And you could get after him a little bit in the middle of the field.
Okay. Let's go to the Lions, man. Hashtag our Lions. I thought they had it. The game just turned so fast. We just talked about it. You know, the Ayuk play, the Gibbs fumble, Reynolds with a bad drop on 4th down, Reynolds with another bad drop later. In the wake of this game, and we'll get to the Lions' outlook for the offseason in a second here, but in the wake of this game, all the talk is about what a buffoon Dan Campbell is. I can't believe that he went for it on 4th down. It strikes me as such results-oriented stuff, you know, like no one talks about all year the Lions have been going for it in these spots on 4th down. It's a big reason why they won so many games and won their division. I mean, and so each spot to me was basically a coin flip. You know, end of the first half, it's 21-7 Lions, it's a 4th and 3, they take the field goal, fine. fourth and two from the San Francisco 28 midway through the third quarter, 45-yard field goal. They go for it instead of the field goal. Josh Reynolds drops the ball. Fourth and three from the San Francisco 30, 7 minutes left. Would have been a 47-yard field goal. They go for it instead. Not close to a conversion aimed for Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think, to me, I would have been fine with kick or go on any of those. I think what people miss is like, why don't they just take the points? Just take the points. People don't realize that in the NFL, a field goal from 45 to 47 yards, you're talking about 70 to 75% conversion rate. And that doesn't factor in that Michael Badgley has been shaky his entire career, wasn't even with the Lions, wasn't the Lions kicker all year. Who knows how comfortable they are with him? And it's this incredibly pressure situation. So if you think that Badgley only makes a 47 or 47 yarder 60% of the time, 65% of the time, it is an absolute no-brainer to go for it. So I was totally fine with all that. To me, that was not the story of the game whatsoever, or why the Lions choked off their lead. But yeah, Evan, any thoughts immediately on the Lions coming out of this game and all the Dan Campbell hate out there?
The fourth down stuff is just a classic and clear-cut divider between people that have the ability to think from a process-oriented standpoint versus the people that can only think based on the results. Yeah. And it's really that simple. And you started it perfectly there at the top of your rant on the situation. And that's exactly what it is. You got a shitty kicker. The Lions have been awesome on fourth and with their fourth down decisions all year. And there's also a player element to this. Like, Dan Campbell is a player's coach. What do you think one of the reasons that they got here was? You know, he's a galvanizing coach. Guess who wants to go for it on fourth down more than anybody in the damn stadium? Mm-hmm. And that's the players. And Dan Campbell believes in his players. He was a player himself.
Yeah.
So there are just so many reasons to go for it. I was disappointed that on that first one that you're talking about, they didn't go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they should have gone for it on all three of them.
Yeah.
On all three of the opportunities. And I think he played a conservative on that first one. I think as we were watching, you could see him on the sideline. It looked like he was going to go for it. And then he kind of just, we're going for the field goal.
Right.
And then after that, he was, all right, well, we kind of got to double down here. Either way, I'm with you. I would have been okay with him going for field goals in all three situations. But the fact that he went for touchdowns in 67% of them, I think is totally fine. And again, I would have preferred him to go for the first down, yeah, or the touchdown on 100% of them.
Right. And that one that Evan's talking about in the first half, that was only a 21-yard field goal, right? So like, just, you know, he felt confident that, yes, we're going to get 3 points there. It's way different when you start factoring in. And I don't think that Dan Campbell is like, and he's not a math guy. He's not thinking about the models that go into this stuff. But every model, you know, Ben Baldwin has one, Seth Walder at ESPN has one, Davidow has one, all these should you go or should you kick a field goal models. And they're not perfect, but they all were like right around break even either way. So, you know, people killing him, I just don't get that. Anyways, I thought David Montgomery was awesome in this game. Evan already mentioned it. I'd love to see more Jahmyr Gibbs next year. Like when Monty was out this year and Gibbs had a chance to be the guy, I mean, the fantasy production was off the charts. I would love to see that. I don't think it would be like a Tony Pollard situation where he regresses in the face of more usage. Maybe I'd be wrong there. But yeah, Evan, what do you think about the split between Monty and Gibbs going forward next season? Any other Lions post-mortem thoughts for you?
I think that Jahmyr Gibbs will probably take a little bit of a step forward as he did over the course of 2023. But Dave Montgomery, you know, had a really nice season as a quality player, really reliable in pass protection. One thing that some of the tape guys have noted is that Jahmyr Gibbs got a lot better in pass protection late in the season, had a bunch of really nice blitz pickups. That will help him in his pursuit of more playing time, because that's not something that he even really did at Alabama. He pretty much had to learn it on the fly in his first NFL season. But yeah, feel really, really good about Jahmyr Gibbs. I blew the receiving yards over on Jahmyr Gibbs. This was one of my favorite bets of the weekend. It was based in part on the Lions falling behind, but you know, that did not happen. But also he had six targets, and he and Jared Goff, I don't want to blame one specific player, flubbed a couple of like potential big plays in the passing game that were very, very frustrating to watch. But absolutely going forward, I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs, we'll be talking about him, I think, in 2024 as a locked-in second-round pick.
I mean, the Lions hit an absolute home run with Sam Laporta. This is it's getting overshadowed by Puka Nacua and C.J. Stroud, but Sam Laporta's rookie year was also record-breaking, set the rookie record for catches, had 10 touchdowns, and almost 900 yards. Then he suffers that injury in Week 18 and still goes nuts in the playoffs, 21 catches in three playoff games. I mean, they hit a home run there. They have a home run with Amon-Ra. I'm not sure on J-Mo for Waymo. And we've spent so much time on this, Evan. I don't want to rehash the whole thing. Again, ACL, hamstring, gambling suspension. He's only 22 years old. You can make a lot of excuses here. I still have concerns about his fit with Jared Goff. And by the way, I think there was a report this weekend Jared Goff's going to get a big payday this offseason. So Jared Goff's going to be there in Detroit. I'm not sure J-Mo's a fit with him. And I have a concern about J-Mo's ability to earn targets. I mean, we're talking about 51 targets now on 369 NFL routes. That's 13.8%. That is really low, even for a deep threat. So, yeah, this was encouraging. He got the end around touchdown. He made a play in the back of the end zone to cover the game for Lions backers. I still am going to have a real hard time on where to draft Jameson Williams going forward. So, yeah, any thoughts on what the Lions can do from a weaponry perspective? If it's not J-Mo, I feel like they need something else on the perimeter.
I share like every concern that you have about Jameson Williams. And at the end of the day, and he's going to be a hot topic of debate throughout, you know, the fantasy preseason beginning. I don't know. Best ball season like has already started or something.
We're working on by the way, for any freaks out there. And yes, you are a freak if you're drafting for 2024 best ball right now. But we are working on rankings because we are peak virginity also. But yes, our rankings for first best ball should be up soon. I can't believe, though, that people are already drafting.
I think that one thing that we can agree upon based on his college tape, based on what he did in this game, based on what he flashed this season, is that he has game-breaking talent. And I will go down on the ship betting on game-breaking talent, even if it winds up burning me. I'm really fascinated to see where he lands. I mean, I think a fair – you know, in 12-team, like, season longs. I think a fair spot for him will be, like, fifth, sixth round, but I could see him getting up higher, people pushing him up higher. We'll have to see.
Yeah. I mean, my gut is to pass at that tag, but, yeah, we'll see. All right.
But the talent that he has can flip a week, can flip a fantasy season.
There's no doubt.
Just not a lot of guys have that ability.
All right. Let's go to the AFC game. We'll start with the Chiefs here. I mean, Chiefs right out of the gate, they force a three and out first series of the game on defense. Then they get the ball. They go 10 plays, 86 yards for a touchdown. And I thought that shook the Ravens. Like, I felt like they panicked almost. And we'll get to the Ravens play selection here in a minute. But yeah, I mean, just right out of the gate, the Chiefs set the tone. Felt like the Ravens almost panicked. And the Chiefs now, good win over the Dolphins at home in the first round. Go to Buffalo and win. Yeah, the Tyler Bass field goal, but whatever. Still go to Buffalo and win, and then go to Baltimore and win. It just strikes me like, yeah, this isn't the Chiefs' best team that they've had, but you have Patrick Mahomes, and you have the best defense in the NFL. And I know people were, you know, up in arms about me saying that or people saying that. I mean, Chiefs' defense, when everyone is healthy, is, I think, the best defense in the NFL, and they proved it here in this game against the Ravens. So you add that up. Patrick Mahomes, maybe greatest quarterback ever. Best defense in the league. You're going to be in games. You're going to have a chance to win every game. It's weird they didn't have a better regular season, but been incredible in the playoffs. Evan, any initial reactions to the Chiefs going back to the Super Bowl yet again?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, kind of getting to be a little bit tired, but I mean, they earned it, you know? So, I mean, you can't take that away from them. They have the best quarterback in football, and I know he didn't have his best season and wasn't the best quarterback in the NFL this year. But he's the best quarterback in the NFL, period. And, you know, continue to prove that. I mean, it was, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts in this one. They really didn't, until the end, Marquez Valdes-Scantling with the icer, they did not hit big plays down the field whatsoever. Kelce was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And Kelce, you know, credit where it's due. Kelce has been unbelievable for the last two playoff games. And in the first playoff game, he had 7 for 71. He had a couple of bad drops, but he was, you know, very productive as a chain mover. And I mean, was it? Yeah, 11 for 11. 11 catches on 11 targets for 116 yards and a touchdown. I mean, he was unbelievable. You can't take it away from him. He's not what he was physically, you know, in his prime. He actually admitted that after the game. He's like, this has been like kind of a rough season for me. You know, I think that he acknowledges that he's, you know, declining a little bit physically, but his rapport with Patrick Mahomes and his route running ability and his feel for everything on the football field, he's a really, really good football player. You know, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he showed up in this game. And there were plays where, like, he was covered. I mean, the one touchdown where Kyle Hamilton could not have done anything more than what he did on that touchdown. It was just that rapport that he has with Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes puts it right where it needs to be. Kelce brings it in. You know, the diving catch on third and long or whatever it was. I mean, it was – Travis Kelce was the best player on the field in this game.
Yeah. Unbelievable playoffs for Travis Kelce. He's up to 2.59 yards per route run these playoffs. He was at 1.92 in the regular season. Also, 13% touchdown rate in the playoffs. That was 5.4% in the regular season. I mean, saving his best here for the end. I want to know, Pacheco came into this game listed questionable, a little bit banged up. No problem. Handled 28 of 31 running back opportunities. Role remains incredible when McKinnon is out. They did bench Mecole Hardman here, Evan. This was something that we speculated about. Mecole Hardman was so bad in the first two playoff games. How could they go on with him? So in this game, it was MVS, 44 routes, Rashee Rice, 43, Justin Watson, 26, a lot of two tight end sets, and then Richie James, 8 routes, Mecole, 1. Kadarius Toney was inactive for personal reasons. He's now in a dispute with the Chiefs, which is like the last thing they need, but he's in a dispute with the Chiefs over whether he's actually hurt or not. Just such a mess. But yeah, man, I mean, the Chiefs with this receiving core getting it together really is a testament to Mahomes and Kelce and the defense. Anything else, Evan, on the Chiefs here? Oh, I should ask how you think this offense matches up with 49ers defense. Just initial thoughts for the Super Bowl.
You can read all about it in my matchup. I haven't really thought about it that much, honestly, yet. You know, I'm still kind of digesting the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a great teaser. Evan's a real professional. Okay. Ravens. Man, a lot of questions coming out of this game about the game plan. And like I said, I love Todd Monken. Like, people were like sending me messages like, is this a fireable offense from Todd Monken? And what they're referring to is Lamar dropped back 46 times and Justice Hill and Gus Edwards combined for 5 carries. Lamar had 3 design runs. So we're talking about, and Zay Flowers had a couple. So we're talking about like 8 to 10 designed runs versus 46 dropbacks in a game they never trailed. I believe they never trailed really by more than 10 when the game was meaningful. So yeah, I get the questions about the game plan. It seems like the Chiefs were almost daring them to do that, though. So, Evan, what do you think of Lamar driving back 46 times and all the people that want Monken fired due to his game plan here against the Chiefs?
I think run-pass balance, you know, in the words of the late Mike Leach, we lost a good one there. Run-pass balance is extremely overrated. And what you really want to do is try to get the ball to your best playmakers as often as possible. That's true balance. Like balanced distribution of the football to your best playmakers. That's real balance. At the same time, like, and really the Ravens only had one good running back run in the entire game. It was really early. Gus Edwards had an awesome run early on. Other than that, they didn't have any other good runs. They did fall behind. They didn't have the ball. Yeah. Like, they had 22 first half offensive plays. The other good run that they had was from Lamar on that the short yardage play where the Chiefs didn't even have any safeties. They were lucky that Lamar Jackson, because they were like in their true full goal line defense, they were lucky Lamar was like looking back and didn't take that to the house. He should have taken that to the house. But I'm not going to kill Monken for that. I think that the, you know, Mark Andrews, I got this one really wrong, that I thought that he would be much more a bigger factor in this game. He had 5 full practice going into the game. He was not on the injury report. I thought that he was going to be a much bigger factor. I think he ran 12 routes. And he had what, two catches for 20 or something?
Yeah, likely played like three 15. Times as much. Likely outplayed.
So I screwed that up. But they were down him. Zay Flowers was the clear cut focal point of the game. But I mean, I think credit goes out to the Chiefs defense because they really put the Ravens offense in a bind. They were so good at putting pressure on Lamar and making him feel uncomfortable. And, you know, with the exception of a few plays to Zay, keeping the perimeter receivers out of it. Rashad Bateman, did he have anything?
I don't believe
one that. For two. It was weird. Odell Beckham, like, did he even play in the first half?
He ended up with a decent amount of routes, but yeah, he was not in the second half. He was featured more. I didn't see him in the first half at all.
Yeah, neither did I. It was just a really confusing and really disappointing offensive effort from the Ravens.
Yeah.
I think everybody deserves a little bit of blame. The pass that Lamar threw to I think it was attended to likely in triple coverage in the end zone was just a brutal decision. No one was on their best game. The offensive line, which was healthy, I thought would do a good job, did not do a good job. I mean, everyone was bad. Everyone from the coaches to the players.
So there's a lot of Lamar haters out there, Evan. And one thing that they're saying is something that you pointed out before this game, which led me to kind of like what you were taking with the Lamar rushing under, was Spags has a history of limiting rushing quarterbacks, keeping them in the pocket. And what people are saying is, see, when you can do what the Chiefs did, Lamar fails as a pocket passer, which, you know, I don't know if I agree with it or not. I still think he's an incredibly valuable quarterback. He can certainly win Super Bowls with Lamar Jackson. But what do you make of all this people blaming Lamar, saying, look, kept him in the pocket and the offense failed?
Yeah, it's a one game sample. And, you know, I know that the microscope is on all these games. Now, what is he, 2-5 career in playoff games? It's still only 7 games. And it's against all good teams that are in the playoffs. So, you know, I don't know. He had an unbelievable regular season. He was good in the first playoff game, and he did not play well here. I mean, and I think that that's I know that's simplistic, but that's the truth.
Yeah. On the running split stuff. So what Evan is saying is, like, if you have good explosive players, you get them the ball. Gus Edwards and Justice Hill are not that, even though I did think Justice was starting to play much better. But if they get Dobbins and or Keaton Mitchell back, and I think, well, we'll see. But
Dobbins is a free agent.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if they would have had Keaton there, you know, not getting Keaton Mitchell 8 or 10 carries in this game probably would have been a mistake. But like, what are you going to get out of 8 or 10 more Gus Edwards or Justice Hill carries? So I don't hate it that much. Sounds like Todd Monken is definitely staying now in Baltimore, not getting any head coaching job.
Yeah. And look, I mean, we also talked about this, like, you know, going into the second year of a new offense, like, this was the first year of Lamar Jackson in this offense. He's going to win MVP.
Yeah.
You know, so what's the ceiling with, you know, a healthy Mark Andrews back and second year of the offense and, you know, Zay Flowers entering his second year, you know, the ability to potentially add, you know, some more weapons. We know that Isaiah likely can really, really, really play. Like, I think that the arrow still has a potential to go up despite an extremely disappointing performance in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about Zay Flowers for a second. I mean, I thought he had an awesome rookie year. It's not going to pop in the numbers as much, but guys like wide receivers in this Baltimore offense just don't pop that much. You know, yards per route run for Zay Flowers is never going to look as good as it does for some other rookies just because of the offense and the system that he plays in with this quarterback. But man, I thought Zay Flowers was awesome this year. A shame that he fumbled going into the end zone here because that could have changed the entire game. We have Zay Flowers up to 22 overall in our dynasty ranks right now, right in that range with kind of George Pickens, Nico Collins, Brandon Ayuk, Jordan Addison, you know, young wide receivers is what we want to invest in dynasty. You guys can check out the rankings on the site if you have DraftKit Pro. For now, I think the arrow is pointing up on Zay Flowers. Also, I'm just concerned he'll never be like Tank Dell just because of the way this offense is. But yeah, any long-term thoughts on Flowers now that we have a full rookie year on him?
I feel real good about him. Like the CJ Stroud offense, like, you know, they'd be willing to throw it teed up on a weekly basis, like 35 to 50 plus times.
Yeah.
And I don't think that an offensive coordinator, even Todd Monken, like, is going to fire it up that often with Lamar. And we saw that there were fairly significant splits with Mark Andrews on and off the field regarding Zay Flowers. So I still, you know, it's a bet on talent situation in Dynasty, bet on youth. They're still going to be a productive passing offense either way, even if they're not high volume. So I'm not going to say anything negative about Zay Flowers, although he did, I don't know, he's probably like a marked man right now in Baltimore.
Yeah. All right. We'll do some Dynasty content once the Super Bowl gets behind us. We also have a bunch more redraft stuff and best ball stuff planned as well once we get out of kind of the Super Bowl window here. For people wondering about our take on coaching changes, we will do a full episode coming up probably in March on all the coaching changes, reaction to that, and fantasy impact from there. All those episodes will indeed be free. Also coming up on this podcast, as I mentioned, with Matthew Davidow, who controls, or at least at one time did control, the NFL betting market. And then next week, Evan and I back for props extravaganza. For Evan, for producer Luke, for producer Ryan, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.